From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. President Trump came to California Friday, and he had this message for immigrants.
Our country is full. Our area is full. The sector is full. Can't take you anymore. I'm sorry. Can't happen. So turn around. That's the way it is.
California's governor, Gavin Newsom, then went to El Salvador early Sunday. He had a different message and said this.
I came down here to try to understand that there's a story before the story. And the story of people entering the United States is one part of it. But what lies underneath it is, I think, a profoundly important question that needs to be answered.
And then yesterday, the Homeland Security Secretary, Kirstjen Nielsen, was asked by the president to resign. So reaction to all of this and the interpretation of these different events have been intense. California continues to be in the spotlight of national politics. Nevada, too, actually, in the Joe Biden story. So let's get to my weekly conversation with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. He joins us from Washington, D.C. That was a lot of setup, Ken, but there's a lot that's just happened in 3 days.
And I'm still awake, so it's perfect.
So last week, by the way, it looked like Joe Biden was going to be the political headline for a while. But then the events since Friday turned dramatic, and California, Ken, continues to be in the midst of national politics.
Well, that's so true, and it's certainly true in the immigration policy, in the immigration scheme of things. We saw that with Jerry Brown, and I think we're seeing it even more with Gavin Newsom than the fact that he almost... This sounds like an exaggeration, and I'm not meaning to be sarcastic, but he almost has his own foreign policy, certainly when it comes to immigration, because Governor Newsom's views and President Trump's views on immigration are like 180 degrees apart.
That's raised some speculation that he's actually, in a subtle way, or not so subtle to some people, running for a national place, running for the presidency, Ken. Do you see it that way?
Well, you know, something, who knows? I mean, first of all, I think it's too late for him to talk about 2020 because I think he and Adam Schiff are the only Democrats on the planet who are not running for president in 2020. So maybe he can take 4 years off. But it's also, it's a combination of maybe trying to stick it to Trump. It's a combination of trying to stand for an immigration policy that the Democrats are known for. And it's also trying to do the right thing. And basically, when you have a president, you know, who belittles and makes mocking comments about immigrants and says, I mean, go home, we have no room for you. That's just a remarkable policy. And so I'll give Gavin Newsom maybe some points for politics, but also some points for the right thing to say and the right thing to do. And that is the treatment of people coming into the country, and especially in California.
This is Gavin Newsom's first international trip. So the fact that he was so bold and took a big step in the face of Trump's message and almost exactly at the same time is being read by a lot of people as a willingness to take on the administration, maybe even bigger than on the immigration topic alone.
Well, I think, look, I mean, obviously he is taking, this is a big step up for Newsom. He's only been in office for a short time. He is obviously taking
on
the president.
Not even 100 days yet, Ken. Not
exactly.
Even 100 days.
Exactly. But I mean, but be honest, if he's going to El Salvador to find out the root causes for why people are fleeing the country, I mean, he could do that, you know, in Sacramento. I mean, he could obviously do it because I think we all know the reason why. It's poverty and it's violence and people are trying to escape it. You don't need to go to El Salvador to find out what it is. And George Skelton in the LA Times, I think it was this morning, it may have been yesterday, but I think it was this morning, that basically said, look, you know, we know the reasons. I mean, you know, and you have plenty of problems at home, but the fact that you have a president who's willing to just cut aid to those three countries, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, who basically these countries are saying, well, when you cut aid, you make the economic situation in our countries worse, and you almost accentuate the caravans and accentuate the people fleeing the country. So I think what he's saying, what the governor is saying, is that, one, treat them with respect, and two, let's find out what's going to make this situation more tolerable. And by cutting off aid to these three countries, it's hard to make the case that it makes it more tolerable.
To the point about him making a statement to the president, Gavin Newsom did tell reporters, and here's the quote, "I think it's important to let folks know that's not our country. That's an individual in our country who happens at this moment to be president." No subtlety there.
No, and that felt harsh to me. I, of course, he's right. The President Trump is, unless he does away with the 22nd Amendment, he is in office temporarily. But so is you know, the governor of California. So I didn't think it had to be personal. But basically, when you have a president who says things that have never been said before by a president, belittling and just, you know, mean-spirited comments about people trying to have a better life, you know, you need people on the other side saying, hold on there. This is not what the United States stands for.
Are we in a time, though, Ken, where if you want to push back politically on this administration because of the audacity of some of its moves and its policies, you need to be audacious yourself? And that's the playbook Gavin Newsom's working out of?
There's no question about that, because if some people say, well, let's go to Congress, but we've seen a very, you know, pliable Republican majority in the Senate that will not stand up to the president on so many things, on taxes, on the Mueller report, on the special the national emergency. So perhaps the only way to take on the president, if you're so inclined, is to do it through the states, through governors who have the courage and the inclination to stand up and come up with its own policies, because obviously when they're not getting the opposition to Donald Trump or is not getting answers through Congress.
So the president went from Calexico to Los Angeles and then back to Washington all in one day. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy from California was among this very small number of delegates that traveled with the president. How much does the president care about California, Ken?
Well, I mean, look, when we talk about President Trump and we talk about his base and we talk about anti-immigrant rhetoric that's been coming at him ever since that escalator ride down Trump Tower in 2015, California has not been in that equation, because, look, we do know that the state went, I think, by 4 million votes to Hillary Clinton. Of course, President Trump says that most of them were illegal vote people who were voting illegally. Nobody buys that. But the fact is, look, California, if we're talking about politics only, the state is lost to the president. There's no question. I mean, no matter whom the Democrats put up, and there's no idea, nobody has any idea who that person will be, it's very hard to make the case that Donald Trump could win the state. So,
but I think what you're going to go to is that because of the names like Pelosi and McCarthy and Adam Schiff, the president does care about California.
Oh, no, there's no question that he cares. What he said, that obnoxious comment he made about Adam Schiff and changing the pronunciation of his last name. You know how he feels when Nancy Pelosi stands up to him. I mean, he despises that. You know that when Kamala Harris or others are going to campaign for president, you know he'll respond to that. At the same time, you know that people like Devin Nunes and Kevin McCarthy and other Republicans who are Trump loyalists are very important to him. We shouldn't conflate the two. The fact that, yes, there are people in California who he will listen to and respond to and react to, but as far as campaigning for and trying to get their votes, I mean, it's hard to make the case that California is in his sights the way, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio, and Pennsylvania are.
You are listening to my conversation with Ken Rudin, the political junkie. By the way, later today, Ken, I'll let you know and listeners know that I'll be talking with California Assemblywoman Wendy Carrillo, and she is with Governor Newsom in the delegation in El Salvador right now. She is, by the way, the only Salvadoran immigrant in the California legislature, and we'll have that conversation tomorrow morning on Insight. Let's shift to the fact that the resignation was abrupt of Kirstjen Nielsen. It was requested by the president. And anything else to add to that at this point?
Well, you know, something, it was basically very sad, because for the longest time, Kirstjen Nielsen stood up to the president in some ways. Like, she was against the separation of families at the border, the migrant families at the border. When he said let's seal the border with Mexico, Nielsen said that, wait a second, this would be terrible economic consequences. And obviously the president was very angry at him. Whenever you have a member of the administration, especially a cabinet member, who stands up to the president, who questions his motives or policy, you know they're in trouble. So for somebody who for the longest time was standing up to the president, it was clear that her job was in jeopardy, and suddenly she became a big advocate of the separation of families, for example, you know, separating children from their parents at the border. And yet that was not enough for the president. So to say that I see a lot of headlines that called it a resignation. Well, it was obviously a forced resignation, because basically he wanted something different. And the fact that he withdrew his nomination to head up ICE, right, because he says he wants to go into a tougher direction. My goodness, if the last 2 years were not the toughest anti-illegal immigration policy we've ever seen coming out of the White House, I don't know what was. So the president knows that his base is very important, very concerned about immigration, illegal or otherwise. He knows that that his reelection perhaps depends on these people coming out. And if he's seen as soft on what's going on the border, which of course is not going to happen, he knows that he'll let a lot of people down. So perhaps blaming Nielsen for the policy, for the situation at the border, just like blaming Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, for the defunding of the Special Olympics, when of course that was Trump's own policy himself. He has this tendency that when the headlines go the wrong way, he will lash out and blame others for the problem. The problem, of course, is that there's no simple solution to what's going on at the border. It's just the number of people trying to cross legally and illegally seem to be breaking records. And the harsher his rhetoric is, I suspect that more and more people want to come now because it may even get worse later on.
Ken, I'm going to shift gears here on you. Let's go back to the reference I made to Nevada and Joe Biden. I don't want to miss having this part of the conversation. Conventional wisdom might have suggested last week that Joe Biden would not decide to run for president in 2020. The Nevada candidate for lieutenant governor, former Assemblywoman Lucy Flores, had made allegations against him that the New York Times is reporting have been continued. Now 6 more women have stepped forward with their own stories. So give me your take on the situation. There's been a number of comment response in social media returns. Biden himself posted a video. How do you see this?
Well, look, I will never say that, well, you know, Donald Trump does it, so why are we jumping on Joe Biden? Or if we attack Donald Trump for doing it, how do we give Joe Biden a pass? That any comparisons to the two are just ridiculous. But having said that, Joe Biden could be the sweet old uncle who loves to, you know, give women unwanted or uncomfortable kisses on the head or the back or rub their shoulders. The fact is that Lucy Flores and other women have been saying this for a long time, or at least we've been watching Joe Biden for the longest time do these things. This is what he does. And maybe it was kind of cute when he was elected to the Senate in 1972, or even elected vice president in 2008. But the Me Too movement it's more than the Me Too movement. It's respect for women and what women have to say. So when you have somebody like a Kamala Harris saying, well, look, I believe Lucy Flores, and I think the reason people believe Lucy Flores is the same reason we believe the woman in the Kavanaugh hearings. It happened to them, and whether the men understand it or not, it's no longer acceptable. Do I agree with the Nancy Pelosi that this has not disqualified Biden as a presidential candidate? Well, that's for voters to decide, and that's for pollsters to decide. But somehow his explaining it and promising never to do it again, like, I didn't do anything wrong, but I promise not to do it again, that just doesn't sound right. So Biden, who leads in so many of the polls, I know it's April of 2019, polls don't matter that much, but for somebody who looks like maybe who could be the strongest candidate against Donald Trump, it is unfortunate for the Democrats that they have somebody who does these things that just can turn off so many voters. The Democrats, you know, for all the poor numbers that Donald Trump may have, it is not a slam dunk to defeat him in 2020. And Joe Biden may bring his own set of problems.
We have linked the 2-minute, 12-second video released on Twitter by Joe Biden, in which he says he will be much more mindful and respectful of people's personal space, that social norms have begun to change. And he says, I get it. And that's what prompted the response by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, which you were just referencing. So let's listen to part of her response.
I don't think it's disqualifying because I think disqualifying is with what your intention is. I do think this about communication in general beyond this. I'm a member of the Straight Arm Club. I mean, I'm a straight armor and all this. Just pretend you have a cold and I have a cold. But what I think that it's important for the vice president and others to understand is it isn't what you intended, it's how it was received. And that's generally about communication in general.
We've added a few phrases to our language because of this news story, Ken, the straight arm club being one of them. And then Joe Biden talking about being a tactile politician. There's another one. So are we redefining communication in this Me Too era? What's happening here?
Well, we'd better be. I mean,
That was a good answer, Ken.
I'm sorry?
That was a good answer. That was a very good answer.
What Pelosi just said, it's not what you intend, it's how it's received. That is paramount. That is key. And every politician should know that.
So I do want to give you the quote from Kamala Harris. She was at a campaign event, and she was responding to the women coming forward with their stories. She said, "I believe them, and I respect them being able to tell their story and having the courage to do it." So are we on Joe Biden watch now?
Well, I mean, the people who say they know him say he is definitely getting in later this month. This has really changed a lot of people's calculations about how well he'd do. Can I just say one thing about Kamala Harris, which I didn't realize until this great article in the New York Times, that of all the major candidates, she is the only one who has not campaigned in Iowa or New Hampshire yet. She's been in the South, she's been in South Carolina, she's been in California, she's been in Nevada, which has an early caucus, but not in Iowa and New Hampshire. So there was an article in the Wall Street Journal today say, well, she probably thinks she could win without those states. Look, it's only April, but it's very interesting that she is doing a strategy that other Democrats are not doing. And again, every Democrat has to stand out. You have 17 Democrats running so far, with Tim Ryan of Ohio being the last one. We'll see if that pans out. And all we know is that in 2.5 months, we're going to have the first Democratic primary debate, and we'll see where we go from there.
If she seems to be writing some of her own campaign playbook, let me just throw out, up for your own interpretation, that some of the same people behind her candidacy and her political career are also involved in Gavin Newsom's. And we started this conversation by talking about such an unusual and interesting move that the governor is making. So maybe for a lot of reasons, these are two politicians who should be watched very closely. They both happen to come from California.
And if California ever secedes, maybe Harris could run against Gavin Newsom for president of California.
There you go. All right, we didn't even get to the Mueller report. We'll hold that for next time. But Ken, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Beth.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. We have posted a link to Joe Biden's video. We've also posted a link to a CNN conversation with Lucy Flores from Nevada. So check that out. And of course, there's ongoing coverage of Governor Newsom's trip to El Salvador. It's all at capradio.org. And you're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.